Chapter 2. Basine didn't answer immediately. She was waiting for further details. What she got was a countdown.
10, 9, 8.
She moved closer to the droid and waved her blaster. Stop! Tell me more! The droid stood, a painful, squealing affair.
Accept or reject. 7, 6.
In Basine's experience, any countdown that began at 10 and ended with 0 involved an explosion. She had exactly 6 seconds to decide which was more dangerous, taking an unknown job from an unidentified source delivered in a singular manner, or waiting to see how much an exploding rust bucket droid could damage the cantina, and just how much of a hit her armor could take.
5, 4, 3.
Fine, I'll take the job, I accept. Just shut up with the counting. The droid went silent and sat down heavily on the bed as if the act of formulating an answer were exhausting.
Your acceptance has been recorded. Stand by.
With a whir and a shudder, the droid projected a shaky hologram to hover a meter in front of Basine's face. The figure was cloaked, naturally, and its voice was so well modulated that Basine couldn't guess at its species, age, or gender.
Basine Natal, you will retrieve a steel case last possessed by Imperial Stormtrooper TK-1472, human name Jor Tribulus. Tribulus was most recently documented as a patient at Vashka City Med Center 1. His records are stored in the facility's databanks under the highest level of encryption. Current whereabouts unknown, but we suspect he remains on Vashka, possibly suffering from psychological instability. Retrieve the case and send an encrypted message on this device using the provided main planetary booster.
The droid's arms swung out, rusted fingers creaking open to reveal a comm so slender and high-tech, it would have more than paid for the average job, even one that took her off-world. Basine's eyes narrowed. What's the pay? The holographic figure paused as if it could hear her, even though it was obviously a recording.
You'll be curious about the payout. Deliver this case, and you won't have to work again.
She frowned, and the figure chuckled darkly.
But you will anyway, won't you? Old habits die hard. You may keep the calm.
The hologram ended, and the figure disappeared. Basine took the calm, sliding it into place behind her ear.
One more thing, Miss Natal,
the voice whispered, sharp and clear through the speaker.
There is another faction hunting for the case. Your adversary will be cunning and likewise well-appointed, known only by the codename Narglatch. Remain undetected and get rid of anyone who opposes you. We'll cover your tracks. Good luck.
She was about to tell the voice where it could shove its Narglatch, but it added almost too low to hear.
Oh yes, and the droid will self-destruct in 30 seconds.
Considering that Suli's cantina was the basis of her current operations on Choctil, she wasn't willing to assume that the droid's self-destruct mechanism would be a small, self-limited affair via EM grenade. Grabbing it by the remaining arm, she spun in a circle, lobbing the pile of rusted metal toward the window with all her strength. The cheap glass shattered as the droid plunged to the dark, empty street. Basine followed it out the window, scuttled down a drainpipe, and took off. By the time the explosion lit up the night, she was running full tilt on her way to the spaceport, leaving nothing behind but a discarded black wig. Whoever her new employer was, they were very dramatic. It was easy enough to hop the late-night shuttle to Chaco City, Choctil's biggest cosmopolitan area. The building sprawled like a disease, spreading ever farther over the planet's light-colored sands. She hadn't set foot on those dusty streets in 6 standard years, and for good reason. Desert heat and city filth made for an uncomfortable combination, And the moment she stepped off the shuttle, she could already feel Chaco settling into her pores, despite the night's chill. She was already sweating beneath her black leather skullcap and neck piece. Bazine had a talent for sneaking in the shadows, and she slipped through dark, familiar alleys on silent feet. The rag-bundled bum who rushed her from a doorway took a boot to the temple, and the gang that had hoped to corner her behind a trash container found that she'd disappeared like smoke. The city hadn't changed much, but Bazine had added to her own skill set considerably since she'd been gone. Soon, she stood before a door that had seemed so much bigger when she'd first seen it as a small child. It had terrified her then. A scarred metal monolith, barely masking the sounds of steel slashing against steel, and flesh beating flesh to a pulp. "Keep out" was spray-painted diagonally across it in what looked like dried blood. She had to smile. It was just a regular-sized door now, and the noises behind it were welcoming. In a way, a small way, she was home. The door slid open before she could knock.
"Welcome back, Chalk Rabbit,"
a voice growled from within. "Nice to see you too, old man." This door, Clodagh's door, was one of the few entrances through which she could comfortably walk without a ready weapon in each hand. Clodagh's school was safe. Even this late at night, fighters were in the cage and working in the gym, grunting and dripping sweat onto the mats and heavy bags. If you wanted to learn combat on Choctaw, you came to Delphi Clodagh, once Tazu Leech's number two, and the most terrifying slab of muscle ever to lead the Kanji Club raids. After losing his leg and eye, Clodagh couldn't prowl the space lanes anymore with the dignity he demanded, so he taught new kids how to break bones instead. Underneath the gym in secret, his real students lived and worked, studying the finer points of espionage under his tutelage. That's where Bazine had grown up. She was his first success. The day he'd plucked her out of a Chaco City orphanage was the day her real life had begun. She'd hurled a stone at him as he'd walked by, smacking him right in the eye patch, and he'd told her that in that moment, he'd never been so enraged or amused. For years, he called her his little chalk rabbit, sending her on errands to fetch this or listen in on that. Now she recognized that he'd been training her all along for the mercenary she would one day become. Bazine recognized the clomp of his metal leg before she saw him, huge arms outstretched for the hug she didn't know she needed. The old pirate smelled like sand and sweat and blood and his favorite fat cigars, and she pounded his back before pulling away to look him in the good eye. "How's tricks?" she asked. "Still carving fat into marble?"
"Cut the crap, kid. You don't visit for 6 years and now you're making small talk? What's your game?"
Underneath the menace, she could tell the old man's feelings were hurt, and she gave him a slight, rare smile. "For a half-blind graybeard, nothing escapes you." In response, he punched her in the shoulder, or tried to. Quick as he was, she was quicker now, and she knew his tells. By the time his fist hit the place she'd been, she was out of range.
"Shouldn't have taught you a damn thing," he muttered.
He turned to clomp back toward his office.
"Come on, calf's hot. Old, but it's still got some kick."
She smirked. "A lot of that going around."
"Know what your problem is? You got no respect for authority."
He shook his grizzled head in mock sadness.
"Never did."
She followed him to the dank closet he called an office and lounged in the same decrepit chair where she'd sat on her first day here. Her feet had dangled off the seat then. Nothing in this room, this place, had changed, which is why she'd left in the first place. Clodagh slammed the door shut and handed her a hot cup before sitting down in his battered leather chair, leaning back and crossing his enormous arms.
"Out with it, Chalk Rabbit."
"Fine. I need a ship."
"And you want to borrow the Sparrowhawk?"
Bazine nodded. You're not using it.
Doesn't mean it's available.
Name your price, old man. One wild gray eyebrow arched.
Well, look who thinks she's the Queen of Naboo. I don't want your money, kid, but I'll trade you.
I want a clean deal. No questions. Clodagh laughed until he had to wipe tears from under his eye patch.
You wouldn't know a clean deal if it bit you in the rump, I bet. Money I've got. What I need is a favor. See, I got this student in the basement. Ori Tenrose, his name, or so he says. Nice Pantoran kid. Great slicer. A whiz with tech, can hack into any system. Decent enough in the fight cage once I busted his nose a few times to break him in. I need him to go on a mission off-world. I got too much going on here to take him myself. He needs to feel hyperspace, survive on ship food, live through a job. You take him with you, you can use the Sparrowhawk. You treat her good, though.
He sipped his calf.
Don't really care if you treat him good. Kid's too green.
How old is he?
How should I know? Grown man. I don't wipe for him.
Bazine sighed. Having a shadow on a top-secret mission was far from clean. She needed to focus on her goal, not teach some stuck-up kid how the ship's toilet worked. Although, how good a slicer? Clodagh nodded slowly.
If it's a machine, he can get into it, get out of it, or transform it into a weapon without being detected. You need intel? He can find it.
But you also said he was Pantoran.
Don't see why that should matter unless you hate the color blue.
And it didn't matter, not really. People were people, and they'd double-cross you or die on you no matter where they were from. But Pantora was the moon of icy Orto-Plutonia, where Narglatches originated, and she was supposed to be on the lookout for an adversary known as Narglatch. It was one hell of a coincidence. Then again, she didn't have to tell Ori where she was going or why. She could simply treat the adventure as a training exercise on behalf of Clodagh. And if he got too curious or aggressive, she had 10 different ways to kill him using only her hands. The other alternatives were to steal a ship and make a new enemy, or pay for passage on a ship and risk entangling innocent, bumbling idiots in her business. At least in this case, she had complete control over the bumbling idiot in question.
You in?
Clodagh asked. He always got impatient during negotiations. She made him wait a few more moments just because she could. Finally, she nodded. I am. But tell the Pantoran that this trip was designed solely to train him. Don't let on that I'm running my own job.
Pretend you're just a teacher under my orders,
Clodagh said with a chuckle.
Looking at you, nobody would believe that.
She arched an eyebrow. People will believe what I want them to believe. They always do.
You still won't tell me your real name, will you? Bazine.
She stood. Not a chance. Now where's my student?